Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Ronojoy Sen, a senior research fellow at the Institute. The assembly election results in four Indian states, which were announced on 3rd December, had a few surprises. The set of elections was also the last before the 2024 general elections. The BJP stormed back to power in Madhya Pradesh, where the election was expected to be close. In Rajasthan and Chhattisgarh, the BJP defeated the incumbent Congress. In Rajasthan, where ruling parties are usually shown the door every election, the result was somewhat expected. However, in Chhattisgarh, where many had predicted that the Congress would retain power, the BJP in fact won quite comfortably. The southern state of Telangana was the only bright spot for the Congress, where it dislodged the Bharat Rashtra Samiti, or the BRS, which was earlier known as the TRS, which had been in power in the state for two successive terms, in fact, ever since the state was formed. The results once again confirmed the BJP's hold over the Hindi belt or the Hindi heartland. It also underscored the north-south divide, with the BJP failing to make a significant dent in Telangana, whereas for the Congress, it was the second state that it won in 2023 after Karnataka earlier this year. Assembly elections are traditionally not good indicators for general elections, but the results will give a fillip to the BJP in the run-up to the general elections and put the opposition on the back foot. To talk about the elections, we have with us Dr. Nilanjan Sarkar. Dr. Sarkar is a senior fellow at the Center for Policy Research, or the CPR, in New Delhi. He was previously an assistant professor at Ashoka University. His research interests include Indian political economy and comparative political behavior with an eye to Bayesian statistics, causal inference, social network analysis, and game theory. His recent work has focused on state-level elections in India through data work and ethnographic methods. So, in fact, he's the best person to talk about the recent set of elections. Dr. Sarkar is also a non-resident fellow at the Center for the Advanced Study of India at the University of Pennsylvania. He received a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and economics from UC Berkeley and a PhD in political science from Columbia University. Welcome, Nilanjan.
Thank you for having me.
Right. So let's flip the, you know, sort of order and questions and maybe get to the big picture first, because, you know, a lot of people who are listening in might be interested in that. So what does the assembly election results say about the, you know, the coming 2024 general elections? And are we headed for a big BJP victory, as many are predicting?
So, I mean, I think as many know, and as you know, Ronojoy, that, you know, in 2018, these three states, Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, Chhattisgarh, the Hindi belt states that went to the polls, actually went in favor of Congress, and some of them were very close. But actually, in the national elections just a year later, it was a sweep for the BJP. In fact, in the last two national elections, 2014 and 2019, the BJP has won 62 of the 65 seats in Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, and Chhattisgarh. Right. And if we take the Hindi belt as a whole, the BJP has had a 90% plus strike rate in the last two national elections. And so part of the reason why it is hard to project, even with this extraordinary performance of the BJP in the Hindi belt states, is that nothing really predicts a 95% strike rate, right? I mean, a lot of things have to go right, even beyond controlling state elections. So what I would say is that certainly this should give a lot of reason to believe that the BJP can repeat the sweep that it has in the last two national elections in the Hindi belt in the coming election. Right. But we should also not forget that in 2014, there was a larger Modi wave, huge anti-incumbency against Congress. In 2019, there was the Balakot strike. There was an anti-Pakistan feeling, a surge of nationalism just before the election. The question is that if there's the absence of that kind of a nationalistic coming together or anti-incumbency, whether these kinds of sweeps are still possible in the Hindi belt. My sense is yes. And I would just sort of point to two very small data points here, right? So first is that there has never really been a question over the last decade or two decades that the Hindi Belt forms a bit of a voter core voter block for the BJP, that there is a core set of constituencies, upper caste, increasingly OBCs in the Hindi Belt, that are voting for the BJP in a very great number from election to election. For the Congress Party, which has, in diminishing roots in the region, given this kind of setback, given the kind of factionalism it saw in the state elections, can it really get itself together again to be able to pose a challenge to the BJP in the Hindi Belt? And the reason why it's particularly pertinent, as I said, 90% plus strike rate for the BJP in the Hindi Belt, it's also been a 90% plus strike rate for the BJP in head-to-head contests against the Congress Party. And so the real electoral question, India alliance or no India alliance, is that can the Congress do better against the BJP in a national election in head-to-head competition? Because in some 200 plus seats, the BJP and the Congress are going head-to-head, especially in the Hindi Belt.
Yeah, that I think sums up the sort of situation for the 2024 elections. So let's now get to some of the specific states that went to elections recently. So if we first sort of take up MP, what explains the huge margin of victory of the BJP in Madhya Pradesh?
Madhya Pradesh is quite an extraordinary outcome in that I think most people who had not been on the ground, and even those who had been on the ground, didn't see the scale of victory coming. It only started showing up when we saw the exit polls. People know now very well that the Axis My India poll, which has actually didn't do particularly well this time, but did actually get Madhya Pradesh correctly, picked a large sweep for the BJP. I actually had also run a post poll, which is proprietary data at the moment, but we were seeing very similar numbers. The story seems to be that among men, actually the gap between the BJP and the Congress is very small, 1 to 3 percentage points based on whichever survey you look at. But the gap among women, meaning as an advantage for the BJP, is about 9 to 10 percentage points. And so the real question for thinking about what happened in Madhya Pradesh is that, A, obviously, why did this gap occur? There's a proximate reason. Shivraj Singh Chauhan, the incumbent chief minister, has been, four-time chief minister, in power for a long time, seen as a welfarist, built a scheme that called Ladli Behna, which targeted women under the age of 60. And in our survey work, more than 70% of households reported being touched by that scheme in some way or another, just to give you a sense of what the scale of it is. So that's certainly a proximate reason. But I think a second reason, and one that we need to sort of think more about, is that Modi and the BJP is increasingly popular among women in the Hindi Belt, and that is not just about a particular chief minister. Even in Rajasthan and Chhattisgarh, you see this phenomenon where female voters are starting to swing towards the BJP.
Of course, you've written about this. Of course, this is probably somewhat different in states like, say, West Bengal, where I think the Trinamool has precisely, I think, capitalized on sort of similar welfare schemes and the connect between, say, Mamata Banerjee is extremely strong with women voters on precisely similar set of sort of schemes and issues. Would you
That's
agree
right.
with that?
Absolutely. I mean, the other party I would add in there, although we don't talk about it as much, is the JDU under Nitish Kumar, right? One of the things that I start to sort of push back with people about is that there's a very simplistic story which says, Modi gave gas cylinders to women and therefore women and ration. It's not that simple, actually. In fact, first of all, women-friendly schemes predate the Modi era quite significantly, especially in the states that we just talked about,
Right,
Bihar,
right, right.
Bengal. Secondly, it underestimates, significantly underestimates the role that the BJP cadre and the Mahila Morcha in particular has had in making inroads to women voters.
Right.
A lot of this is not just a, hey, I got something from the government effect, but an actual impact of a long-running social mobilization that the BJP has invested in.
Right. So, if you move to sort of the neighboring state, you know, neighboring to Madhya Pradesh, that is Chhattisgarh, the Congress was supposed to have the edge in Chhattisgarh. But what do you think went wrong for the Congress and what went right for the BJP?
I mean, so there's a narrow answer. Empirically, we see a huge shift among the tribal communities, in some sense, back home to the BJP, and that's an important point to make. But they had voted en masse for the Congress Party last time, and they voted the BJP this time. Now, what I will say, I didn't spend a huge amount of time in Chhattisgarh, so it's not fair for me to make deep field-based comments. But what I can tell you is that for my friends and colleagues who spent a fair amount of time in Chhattisgarh, the general view was that the national media was not internalizing how close, at a minimum, the election had gotten. That the BJP was certainly looking much stronger than the national media was saying. And, you know, just one sort of small point here is that other than Madhya Pradesh, the other three states that are big states, or Mizoram also into the elections, are states in which the difference between the two parties is, you know, 4 percentage points or less, basically, right? So you can see why, you know, from the standpoint of field observation or even surveying, being able to make grand claims based on a 3 or 4 percentage point difference is very difficult.
Right.
And that's part of what happened, right? So there was a general sense Bhupesh Baghel is popular in the Delhi media. A lot of the national media does not go to Chhattisgarh. And small vote share differences make huge differences in seat shares, which is what we saw in Chhattisgarh this time, right? So we're talking about essentially, if I'm not mistaken here, a 4 percentage point gap or so. And we're looking at a difference of almost 20 seats between the BJP and the Congress. So,
Right, right,
you know,
yeah.
it sort of translates in a very particular way. The other sort of final point that I would make, and something that has plagued the Congress in the Hindi Belt states, part of the story that we have, right, is that each of these states have at least seen two major factions. In fact, one story we have in Madhya Pradesh is one of the biggest factions, Jyotiraditya Sindhia, actually defected to the other side, right? So there is a question about the extent to which the factions were able to work together. When you are going up against a party organization as formidable as the BJP, in the Hindi Belt to have that kind of division, and the inability to reach all of your voters in a stable and consistent way can have very, very negative effects.
Right. So, now to sort of move on to Rajasthan. In Rajasthan, of course, has a history of revolving door politics where the incumbent is usually voted out every election. So, would you agree that considering, that sort of history that Rajasthan has, the Congress actually did not do too badly in Rajasthan?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I actually, this is the one state I did spend some time in. And it was actually a very different election by Rajasthan standards. I'll tell you two things. First, the incumbent chief minister, Ashok Gehlot, was not actually facing that much anti-incumbency. In survey data, and anyone you talk to who was in the field, people were broadly happy with his performance, which is to say that, you know, unlike what is being said against the BRS in Telangana, you have a large number of social schemes. They did reach their intended targets. Not all of them are popular, but, you know, it was seen as relatively fair and universalistic. And he's a son of the soil. He's quite popular.
Right.
Sundar Rajay, who has been the BJP face for a long time, was actively sidelined by the BJP. So much so that I think in the field, when you heard negative things about Vasundhara Rajay, you were more likely to hear about it in a BJP party office than in a Congress party office, right? Because it was part of the BJP strategy to diminish her role. So in that way, it was a very, very different election, right? Here too, and this is one state that many of the polls outside of Seawater missed. Here too, we picked up quite a bit of gender differentiation in terms of voting preference. So while it was very close among men, we've picked up a significant support for the BJP and Modi in particular, Prime Minister Modi in particular, among women. And interestingly, this is one state that your polls like Access My India went actually quite off the mark, and they
Right,
did
I
not.
think they predicted a fairly close, I think, contest between the BJP and Congress.
And my sense is that they missed the scale of support among women. You've seen that when the Access My India poll has gone off in Bihar and West Bengal and Rajasthan, they essentially missed the female voters. So this is not to, the reason I'm bringing them up is not to attack them, but because they are among the strongest pollsters in India, it is just simply to show how difficult this problem is. In Rajasthan, speaking to women in rural areas, in upper caste communities, which are very, very conservative, it's very, very difficult. And OBC communities, right? And so you have to do it with a lot of care and a lot of strategy. And it's only then that you sort of figure out how half of the electorate is voting. So I do think that some of that seems to have come to the fore. There is an interesting question in the case of a state like Rajasthan, which is why is it that a chief minister that faced relatively little anti-incumbency, who actually delivered benefits, still lost, right? One is, as you said, there's this sort of swinging nature, regular political alternation in Rajasthan. The second is, like every other state in the Hindi belt, there is one other major faction, a disgruntled faction behind Sachin Pilot. It is true that when we went to the Gujjar belt en masse, I mean, a very high percentage of Gujjars that we met had decided to switch sides and vote for the BJP. In the Shekhawati belt, where there had been a sweep for the Congress party among Jats, we met a lot of people who were switching sides. So some of those core identity-based vote banks the Congress had picked up were starting to crumble. And they just simply did not have enough goodwill in the system, particularly with women voters surging for the BJP, to be able to hold on to the state.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. So, let's move finally to Telangana, which was the only bright spot for the Congress. And its significance, I believe, got somewhat lost in the oral narrative of, the BJP's extraordinary triumph in the North. So what lessons do you think the Congress and, in general, the opposition alliance can draw from Telangana, looking ahead to the 2024 elections?
I mean, this is one where we're looking at very small differences in voter, 2 percentage point difference between the Congress and the BRS, and 25, a difference of 25 seats, right? And so it's just completely a mismatch between differences in vote share and seat share. And what seems to have happened is, other than a certain sort of urban vote bank, there were real concerns about biased distribution. There was severe anti-incumbency against the MLAs. So while the incumbent chief minister has been among the most prominent welfarists in India, right, delivering significant welfare schemes, there was a concern with particularly two major flagship schemes, Raitu Bandhu and Dalit Bandhu, that they had been delivered in a very biased and even partisan manner. Now, the problem, and this tells you a little bit about welfareism in India, is that, unlike what I said about Gaylord, and unlike maybe what we think about Modi or Mamata Banerjee, once you are not seen as being able to deliver in a fair and universalistic fashion, then it is not a net positive for you. And the BRS needs to figure out why it happened. Was it a, was it something that was mandated by the incumbent chief minister, KCR? Is it something where the MLAs were able to insert themselves into the process? Or, I mean, and I think one of the groups that has a little bit of explaining to do is the bureaucrats in the state. Because, if you think about how the design of some of these welfare programs go, we have to figure out why, how that kind of political intervention, if it is, if what is being alleged is true, how that can even possibly happen.
Right. So, yeah.
So that is a large part of the story. And then, of course, there are the sort of standard stories that the Congress was able to find fresh young blood. It doesn't have the factionalism problems that you have in the North. It
Right.
doesn't have the BJP versus Congress dynamic that you have in the North. But this is really a story of an extraordinary, in my mind, right, an extraordinary amount of anti-incumbency that KCR and BRS was facing, which a few months ago looked impossible.
Yeah, so I guess that kind of provides a round of the sort of the four major states that went to elections and which and for whom the results were announced December 3rd. So we could have gone on, but in the interest of time and for sort of keeping the podcast to the sort of optimal 20-minute length, we'll draw this conversation to an end. Thank you, Nilanjan, for sharing our insights on South Asia Chat. You were listening to the South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates through social media. We are on Twitter or X, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. South Asia Chat is also on Spotify and Apple Podcast. I might also mention that we are hosting a webinar titled Road to 2024, Elections in 5 Indian States on December 7th from 4 to 5:30 p.m. SGT or Singapore time. Do join us by registering via the link provided in the event announcements. Thank you, Nilanjan, once again for taking time to do the podcast.
Thank you for having me.